Right. Okay, good evening. We are before Purim, which is going to be next Monday night. And Bezrat Hashem, there'll be a Megillah reading and Purim party and PowerPoint presentation, Bezrat Hashem. That's true. So we are taking a discourse which relates, a mimer, which relates to Purim. It was said in 1977, and was actually said on Shabbat, Parshat Tetzaveh, which is the same Shabbat we're coming to now, which then was the day after Purim. It was Shushan Purim, it was the 15th. And it's not a muga maima, it's a bilti muga, it's not edited by the Rebbe, from Tavshin Lamed Zayin. So the basis, the beginning of the maima is, you see very often a discourse has a verse in the Torah, which is like the entry, the point of entry. It's, see, in a sense, a maimer, a Hasidic discourse, is a kind of midrashic form. So in the midrashic literature, there is a scriptural verse, and then from the scriptural verse, one enters into what might be a story, a philosophical teaching, some kind of string of ideas. Now, the interesting thing about the later, as it were, post-midrashic midrash, is that they don't only take scriptural verses as their starting point. They might take a passage in the Talmud or in the Mishnah, or it might even be a midrash itself, and it becomes a teaching about a midrash or about a story, a line from a story in the Talmud. So, in fact, this is from the beginning of Masechet Megillah in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah begins, Megillah nikhed pe'echadasa, the Megillah is read on the 11th, b'shneimasa, and on the 12th, b'shloshasa, on the 13th, b'arba'asa, on the 14th, b'chamishasa, on the 15th, Lo pachot v'lo yoter, not less and not more. Which day do we normally read the Megillah? We're talking about the date of Adar, incidentally. When do we normally read the Megillah? Which? 13th and 14th or 14th and 15th? 14th. 14th. Right, okay. So it's usually read on the 14th. That's in most places, and in today, there's what's called Shushan Purim, and the main place where Shushan Purim takes place is Jerusalem, where it's read on the 15th instead of the 14th. Right? The point being that in Shushan, which was the capital of Persia, the fighting against the enemies of the Jews took longer. And they, in the rest of Persia, they fought, they were successful against the enemies, and then they celebrated the next day. So that was the first Purim. But then, in Shushan, there was another day fighting. So they celebrated the next day. So therefore, Purim, for most places, is on the 14th. But in those cities now, Shushan itself, and other cities, other walled cities. Now, the point is that at that time, while this was taking place, Jerusalem did not have a wall because it was in between the time of the first and the second temple. So the sages said, not a time, not that it has a wall in the, at that time, but that it had a wall in the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. And the time of Yehoshua ben Nun, Jerusalem had a wall. And so, therefore, any city like that, celebrates Purim on the next day. And also not only the city of Jerusalem, but Besmichotla, everything around it. So all the new suburbs of Jerusalem, Ramot, all these different places, they also celebrate Shushan Purim on the 15th of Adar, not the 14th.
Even though they're outside the walls.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah, so the because they are next to a walled city, and in fact the only cities, Jerusalem is actually the only city where only Shushan Purim is celebrated, but I think that in Yafo and Tiberia there is a safek, so they read the Megillah both days on the 14th and the 15th. I'm not sure if everyone does that, but that was a what I gleaned. So now, how does it work that the Megillah is read not just on the 14th and the 15th, but the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th? Chakin hamukafin choma, cities which were surrounded by a wall, miyamot Yoshua ben Nun, from the days of Joshua ben Nun, korin b'chamish asar, they read on the 15th. That's Shushan Purim. We now only have Jerusalem for certain. Kfarim v'ayarot gdolot. Then we have villages and big cities. So we have three levels. We have a village, a city, and a walled city. Okay, so there's three levels. So villages and cities, korin b'arba'asa. They read on the 14th. Eila, but shahakfarim makdimim liyom haknisa. The villages, they will read the Megillah earlier on the day of gathering. Now, the day of gathering is a Monday or a Thursday. Monday and Thursday, in ancient Israel, these were market days, and they were days when the law court sat. They are days when the Torah is read today. And so what would happen is that on Monday and Thursday, the people who live in the villages would meet together somewhere. And so therefore, that was a special day. And so on that day, they would read the Megillah earlier. And so it would sometimes come out that they read the Megillah on the 15th. So if the 14th, on the 11th, sorry, okay. They would read on the 11th. So if the 14th is on a Sunday, so the village, they wouldn't read it later. They wouldn't read it the next day. That's already Shushan Purim. Mm-hmm. So they would read it Thursday before the Sunday. So if the Sunday is 14th, so then you have 13th is Shabbat and 12th is Friday, 11th is Thursday. So they would read on the 11th, which is Thursday. So sometimes it could be as early as the 11th. Okay, now that is a Mishnah.
So this would be because that's when most people would be gathered together.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And we don't read the Megillah on Shabbat. Mm. Just as we don't blow the shofar on Shabbat, or we don't read the Megillah on Shabbat. Maybe it's not exactly the same, but we certainly don't read the Megillah on Shabbat.
Does this refer to Megillah Esther?
Yeah, no, we're just talking about Megillah Esther. Now, how do you define a city as opposed to a village? So there's an interesting definition in Mishnah Gimel. Ezo hi ir gedola, what is a big city? Kol sheyesh ba asara batlanim. Any city that has got 10 people. Now, batlan in Hebrew means a person who does nothing. So it means, as it's explained, it's 10 people who are, they are sitting in the synagogue or the Beit HaMidrash, studying and learning, and you know, when it comes to tefillot, there's always a minyan there. In other words, the city is rich enough to support a group of people who don't have any other employment than just sitting around in the Beit HaMidrash studying and doing the things that people do in the study house, rather than going out to work. So it would only be, if it were a village, the idea is everyone in the village has to work. Whereas in a city which is larger, there's enough, somehow enough resources that you can have a group of people who are there studying. So that's the, and it's called the Batlanim, so, which is an interesting way of putting it, because Batlan in modern Hebrew usage, not only in Ivrit, but in rabbinic usage, is a term of dismissal. Ah, Batlan. Yeah, Leibel, that's right, a person who doesn't do anything. Anyway, so that is the, that's the Mishnah, or the Mishnayot, and from that we're going to start the Maimah, and we will try and enter into the spirit of the Maimah through the Maimah melody. Oh, yo, yam, bo, yam, ba, yam, bam, bo. Ho, yadam, ba, da, yum, bam, bo. Oh, yam, bam, bo, yam, ba, yum, bam, bo. Ha, yam, bam, bo, yam, bam, bo, ba, ho. Ya yedilam ba yam ba yo, ya yedilam ba yam ba yo, ha yedilam ba ha yedilam ba ho, yam ba yam ba yam ba bam bam, hom ba yam ba yam ba bam bo, yam bam ba yo bam bam bam. Okay, so now we begin the actual text of the discourse. Megillah nikhet b'yud aleph b'yud beit b'yud gimel b'yud dalet b'tet vav lo pachot lo yoter. The Megillah is read on the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, the 15th, not less and not more. Chachin hamukafin chomam yemot Yeshua ben Nun, cities surrounded by a wall from the days of Joshua, korim b'tet vav, they read on the 15th. Kfarim ba'erot gedolot korim b'yudalad, and the villages and big cities read on the 14th. Eilu shakfarim makdimim liyom haknisa, except that the villages read earlier on the gathering day of Monday and Thursday. Okay, so that's the Mishnah. V'hine yadua, now it is known, Torat ha-Baal Shem Tov, the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, al Maimar Hazal, about the saying of the sages. And this saying is also in Masechet Megillah, in the Mishnah, but we don't have it here. It's the beginning of Perik, the second Perik, which says, HaKoreh et HaMegillah leMafreya lo yatsa. If someone reads the Megillah backwards, they have not fulfilled their obligation. Now, reading the Megillah backwards, in practical terms, might mean a number of different things. The normal thing that it means is that a person comes to the Megillah reading, and they're a few minutes late. And so they've missed the first chapter. And so they listen through to the end. And then there's someone else who's going to read the Megillah, or it's going to be read again. And so the person who's reading it for a second time reads the first chapter. And so one thinks, oh, well, now I heard from chapter 2 till the end, and now I've heard chapter 1, so I've heard the whole Megillah. Like years ago in England, that's how people used to go to the cinema. I don't know if it still happens this way, but the film is on a cycle, and so they come in at any point in the film, they watch till the end of the film, then it begins again, and they say, this is where we came in, and they've got the money worth of the 5 shillings or whatever it cost them. But So that's what it means reading the Megillah Lemafreya backwards. One isn't yotzeh that way. You
the
can't
Mafreya
do it that way.
Lemafreya is not backwards. Lemafreya
is in advance.
Interesting.
In modern,
that's a modern usage.
Lemafreya, you know, the question is, how can they read the Megillah before Purim? That is the question.
No, it doesn't mean that. Lemafreya means, it usually means the way that I've described, that you hear the end before the beginning. It could be that the two meanings relate together, because you're hearing Lemafreya, you're hearing. But
no, because the first reading that wasn't complete was a Lemafreya, because you're reading now the Megillah, and then you say, I hear now the first chapter, and the other one I read it before. The one that you read before was done Lemafreya.
All right, maybe. I'm not sure. It's in the, it may be just a distinction in the modern usage of the word Lemafreya.
This is Tafshin Lamed Zayin. It's recent, yes? Tafshin Lamed Zayin is recent.
We can see the text.
yes, but not necessarily. But he's quoting from the Mishnah. Or it's the Baal Shem Tov is quoting from the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. Now, so what does that mean? Here he gives a different explanation. Shahapirush v'zeh, the meaning of this is, not in practical terms of how you hear the Megillah. Hu shesoveh shahakatuv ba hu inyan shel mafreya sheshayich la'avar. He thinks that what is written in the Megillah is something that relates to the past. In other words, if we hear the whole story of Purim and everything about Purim, and we think it's an ancient thing, and it's nice literature maybe, but it doesn't relate to us today. Lo yatsa, we haven't fulfilled our duty, because in fact, the whole concept of the story of the Megillah and the laws of Purim and the ideas of Purim, including this idea, which would seem to be just an ancient practice, because we don't do it this way anymore. This idea of reading the Megillah on the 11th, 12th, 13th, we don't do that now. There is a difference of opinion whether it depends on the temple standing or being Mekadesh the Chodesh al Pi Hara'iyah, sanctifying the new moon because people saw the moon. You see, the ancient way of fixing the calendar was by actually seeing the moon, and the witnesses would come to Jerusalem and say, we saw the moon, and then they would say, it's the new moon. But that has not been operating for close to 2,000 years. And also, for 2,000 years, the temple has not stood. So, whichever is the situation which leads to the not doing it this way, we don't do it this way of reading the 11th, 12th, 13th. We only read either on the 14th or on the 15th. So, in other words, this Mishnah that we read seems to be talking about an ancient practice from 2,000 years ago. However, as the Baal Shem Tov says, everything about Purim is relevant to us today, and it's actually taking place inside us at this moment. V'hainu, that means, the nosaf ala horav or hoda'a klalit, in addition to the general idea, that ha-Torah hi nitzchit, that Torah is eternal, v'chol zman v'chol makom, in every time, in every period, and in every place, ולכל אחד ואחת מישראל, and to every Jewish man and woman, ובמיוחד הוא כן, especially is that so, בעניינו של פורים, as regards פורים. So in other words, the Torah is always eternal for every individual, and especially פורים. שמודגש בו, because with פורים, it's emphasized, the וזכרם לא יסוף מזרום. The memory of these days, of the events of Purim, will not disappear from the children of the Jewish people. So there is an idea which the Talmud states, Kol ha-svarim atidim libatel. all the sacred books will disappear and only Megillat Esther will be left. Now, what does it mean they will disappear? The books of the prophets, like Isaiah. How can the book of Isaiah disappear and Megillat Esther be left? Because not that it'll actually disappear, but it'll appear commonplace. Libatel means it'll just become ordinary. Mm-hmm. Everyone will have visions, like Isaiah. But Purim will remain something mysterious and deep and reaching for the unknown essence of the infinite, and will always be something profound, even at a time when, in the time of Mashiach, everyone has prophetic powers, and the book of Yeshaya, of Isaiah or Ezekiel will not seem very special. So there is that concept that the Purim Megillah has some kind of special eternal quality more than the other sacred books. So hinei nosav lezeh. Now, in addition, yeshno perush ha'Baal Shem Tov. In addition to that idea that all Torah is eternal, and especially the Megillah, which says in it that it is eternal, there's the extra teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, da hakoreh et ha'Megillah lemafreya, that if one reads the Megillah, what does that mean, lemafreya? Shesover shehakatuv ba, he thinks that that which is written in it, hu inyan ha'shayach la'avah, is only something relating to the past, lo yatsa, has not fulfilled its duty. V'zeu Megillah nikreit b'yud aleph b'yud beit b'yud gimel b'yud dalet b'tet vav. And so therefore we have the idea that the Megillah is read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. And we have these different kinds of city. He's repeating it again. The cities with walls that read on the 15th. And then we have villages and big cities, but not with walls. They read on the 14th. And the Inyan Zen Nimshach B'chol Zman. This idea is there in every period. Gam Bizman Sheyesh Itchalkut B'Kach Ve'Ir Kvar. Also at a time when there is the division, the pluralism of a walled city, an ordinary city, and a village. Sheheim Mechulakim B'Makomot Shalahem. They are in different places. Literally, Shezeu Inyan Hitchalkut B'Makom. In being in different places, umizeh itchalkut b'makom, from the fact they're in different places, nimshach achakach gam itchalkut b'zman. This leads also to a division in time. And so there we have the idea of some kind of differentness, some kind of distinction, which is being represented by these three levels of walled city, ordinary city, and village. So this is going to be explained in personal terms. What does it mean, walled city, city, and village? Va'alderet, so there is the difference in place, because you have a walled city here, and a big city there, and a village over there. And therefore they are different in time. And so, and then you come to the third level. You see there are three things that connect together. See, Olam, Shana, Nefesh. The world, like place. Shana, the year, which is time. And Nun is Nefesh, the soul. So the soul, so we have these distinctions in place, these different kinds of cities in different places in physically. One is here and one is there. And there are different times. One is the 11th, one is the 12th. And we also have in the soul, and that's going to be the focus. The Yeshno ben il ben kachu ben kvar, because in terms of the soul and in terms of the individual in relation to his or her soul, you have what is called a city dweller, or a walled city dweller, or a villager. And so each of us can explore this idea. In all those different levels, where it is, when it is, and what kind of soul, what kind of person, we have the idea of reading the Megillah. Megillah itself is fascinating. I mean, it doesn't talk about it in this discourse, but the idea of Megillah, Megillat Esther. Esther relates to a word meaning concealment. Anochi Aster Astir Panai, I will hide my face. Megillah is a word meaning revelation. The galot. So it's the revealing the hidden. So this process of the special quality of reading the Megillah applies to all these different distinctions, city dweller, walled city dweller, villager, and the different places and the different times. V'chevan, and now comes a beautiful concept, the last 2.5 lines of this paragraph. V'chevan shekol nefesh miYisrael, since every soul of the Jewish people, since every Jewish soul klula is made up of mehasamach libot neshamot Yisrael, of the 600,000 Jewish souls, each one of us has within us everyone else as well. Shows why we're such complicated people. So we all have all the other different levels in us. Muvan shekol ha'dagot b'ben kfar ben ir u'ben chach yeshlam gam b'chol echad v'achat. This means that the different levels of villager, city dweller, and walled city dweller exist in each man and woman. The yeshna madrega benefesh, because there's a level of the soul, she bevchina ben kfar, which is like a villager, and another which is like a ben ir, like a city dweller, and another one of a village, of a big city, walled city. Right. Now, so there we have taking the Mishnah, taking the words of the Mishnah, saying that they are, which is talking about an ancient practice of reading the Megillah at different times according to where one lived, which still has the remnant that in Jerusalem they read the Megillah on the 15th, and in Yafo and Tiberia they read it the 14th and the 15th. But everywhere else they read it just on the 14th. But there is the concept of Shushan Purim. Shushan Purim is a realistic concept, even, you know, most Jewish school. Does your school have a school on Shushan Purim?
No.
See, it's regarded as part of the holiday. It's and there are some people who wear Shabbat clothes on Shushan Purim, not only on Purim, but also on, Polish Hasidim wear Shtreimel on Shushan Purim, as well as Purim. So it's got an aura. Shushan Purim has an aura about it. However, taking all those concepts and then saying that this distinction of different times and different cities is actually part of our own spiritual makeup, and what we're going to try and explore is what that means. Second paragraph. Va'inyan hu, now the subject is its matter, as it is as follows. Dehine bavodata adam, in the service of a person to God, dani nivreti lishamesh et koni, I was created in order to serve my Creator. In other words, that's the main focus of what the life of a person is, service of God. Yeshno inyan ha'avodah melushon ibud orot. There is a concept of service. Now, the word avodah is interesting. We can translate avodah as service, but also ibud orot. How would you translate ibud orot?
Tannery.
Tannery, exactly. You take a thick skin called an or, with an ayin, the skin of an animal, and then it has to be tanned. It has to go through a whole process of being cleaned and scraped and left to stand and all kinds of cleansing processes until you can get from the raw hide of ox that you can get something which is fine, supple leather, which might make a pair of shoes, let's say, or a handbag, or it could even make something very spiritual, like a Torah scroll, also, or a mezuzah, which is a process of refinement. So that is called avodah. So divine service can be the effort to transform our coarse nature into something more subtle and refined and spiritual. There are thick skins, raw skins, which have to be tanned, which have to be refined, as is explained in earlier books of Hasidic teachings. And that's what we mean by the villager. The villager is the one who has this task facing him or her, that there are these basically coarse, raw qualities which need to be refined. He who avoda, higher than this, we have the service of ayarot, of cities, and kachim, and even of walled cities. Ulahavina chiluk shebein itpalut deben kfar leitpalut deben kach. Now we should consider the difference between the excitement of a village to the excitement of a walled city dweller. Now, this is actually referred to in the Talmud. Hine Yuvan, we can understand this, Mimadi Itaba Gemara, from what it says in the Talmud in Chagigah, gives us the footnote, and which is also discussed in Hasidic teachings, Hachiluk Shebein Merkavat Yeshaya LeMerkavat Yecheska. The difference between the Merkavah, the chariot that was seen by Isaiah, and the chariot that was seen by Yechezkel, Ezekiel. Now, in the book of Ezekiel, we have in chapter 1 a very famous, dramatic description of the Merkavah. It's of the chariot. It's a kind of manifestation of the divine in a very intense way. Yechezkel throws himself on the ground. It's an astonishing revelation, and what's called Merkavah mysticism focuses on the ideas which are there. Generally, we look at this passage in Yechezkel as having a very strong expression of divine revelation, part of it being the way that Ezekiel himself responds. It's something enormously impressive to him in a very intense way. Now, the Talmud notes that in chapter 6 of Isaiah, there's also a report about a vision of a somewhat similar kind of manifestation of the divine, but much more calmly. So Isaiah was a great prophet who was living in the time of the temple and continuously exposed to intense spiritual experiences. Whereas Ezekiel, we first meet in the Babylonian exile, and that's where he has his visions. We don't know of anything about him beforehand. So the Talmud says, in fact, they were seeing the same thing. But Ezekiel got extremely excited about it, because it was so unfamiliar. Whereas to Isaiah lived in a world of visions and divine revelations, and so it's not so overwhelming. So that difference between being overwhelmed by spirituality, which is like the villager, and not being overwhelmed, which is like the one who lives in the walled city. And the comparison that the Talmud says, Lemar Yechezkel Domeh, what is Ezekiel similar to? Leven Kfar Sharah Et HaMelech, a villager who sees the king. He sees the king with the king's horses and soldiers, and the king is in a golden carriage. Oh, it's just so amazing, you can't get over it. Whereas the person who lives in Belgravia, around the corner to Buckingham Palace, every day whenever he goes near, there's the changing of the guards, and maybe sometimes they see the Queen, it's not so special. So that's the comparison that the Talmud gives. Ulama Yishayah domeh, what is Isaiah similar to? A ben chach, a person living in a walled city, in the capital city, Yishayah et ha-melech. He sees the king and he's not so surprised. Shachiluk beinayim hu sheben kfar. So in the difference is simply that the villager who isn't used to seeing the king, when he does see him, this is something completely new. Upoel alav.
Mitashturim,
that's right. Upoel alav, it has the effect on him, we've run to the fifth line, it has the effect on him, shahitpa'alut shelo, his excitement, tiyeb rash gadol, it's with great noise, mitashturim, it's very stormy, it's powerful. Masha'en kein ben chach, whereas the city, walled city dweller, Liot ragilim im ha-melech, he's used to the king, einit pa'alut etzlo, he doesn't have the same excitement. Ve'inyan ha-memutza, and the middle level, which is in between, between the city dweller and the villager, is ha'arot, the city. So we got three levels, the walled city, the city, and the village. So, and then it speaks about what kind of, special quality that the city has got. Right, four lines from the end, quoting from the second Mishnah, the third Mishnah, that in the city there are 10 people, Shehem b'teilim imilachtan, who do not have to work, liot mitzuyim b'tfila, who are there davening, as Rashi says, there's always a minion in the shul, Ola Torah, or they are studying Torah, as is expressed by the Rambam in a responsum of his, this whole idea of the 10 batanim. So that's the city. The city has got the 10 batanim, the 10 people doing nothing except study. And the village doesn't have that, it's lower, and then higher is the walled city. Now the idea is that we have got these three qualities inside us, and that's what we're going to try to explore. And we're now going to come to a whole list of threes, of triples, in all kinds of ways, which in fact reflect something that the Talmud says about the way that when God gave the Torah, this is in Masechet Shabbat, he gave a triple Torah, Torah Leviim Ketuvim, to a triple people, who were made of Kohanim, Levites, and Israel, by Moshe, who was a third child, Aaron, Miriam, Moshe, and it was in the third month, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, and on the third day, because God said you should prepare for 3 days, and on the third day came the giving of the Torah. So that's the thing in the Talmud. So now this we're going to have a presentation of threes, not the way it is in that page of Talmud, another set of threes, basically a Kabbalistic set of threes. Va'inyan hu, the topic is as follows: the avodat ha'adami al yedei nishmato. A person serves God through his or her neshama, their soul. And in the soul, Shabbat Gimel Madregot, there are three levels in the soul. Va'afal pisha amru razal chamisha shemot nikhula. Even though the sages talk about five names or five levels for the soul, yechida, only one, chaya, neshama, ruach, and nefesh, so those are five levels, Mikol makom, nonetheless, avodat ha'adam ube'esek kochot pnimim. The service of a person is with the 10 inner powers, and those 10 inner powers, which it relates to the 10 sfirot, and those 10 sfirot, they relate to bechinat nefesh ruach neshama. So there we have the three levels of the soul. Let's put it, the lower one is nefesh, and higher is ruach, and higher still is Neshama. So these are three levels of the soul which are within the ten Sfirah. There are higher dimensions, higher and Yechida, but they are, as it were, beyond the structure that we're speaking about now. They're less accessible. Yechida reveals itself without, it's beyond us in a way.
This is the three parts of the Shemot that are in the ten Sfirot.
Yeah, of the soul. Here we're talking about the soul. So in the soul there are ten Sfirot, and Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama are the three dimensions of the soul which express themselves through the ten Sfirot of the soul. There's Chochmah Shebe Nefesh, there's Chesed Shebe Nefesh. Within the soul there are these different dimensions. Now, as well as the soul, we also have three garments of the soul. And those are spoken of as Machshava, Dibur, Umaaseh. Now that is thought, speech, and action. So we have three levels there in the spiritual or practical life of a person. And it says, Shehein bedugmat lagimul madregot nefesh ruach neshama. These are like the three levels, nefesh ruach neshama. So each of the word nefesh ruach neshama just means soul. We haven't got a good English word. There's ruach could be spirit, but neshama maybe relates to the word for breath, and nefesh also relates to breath. So it's they simply mean this the spiritual dimension. There isn't an easy different translation in English, but thought, speech, and action are tangible, and they're aspects of the person. V'chein habriya.
What is Dalet Mem Chet?
Machshava, Dibur, Umaaseh.
Machshava, Dibur, Umaaseh.
Yeah.
Levushim.
That's right. So they are Levushim, they are garments of the soul. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting that we do not have a body-soul dichotomy, which is typical of Western thought, because the body and the different aspects of the body, including the actions, the speech, and the thought, which is also part of the physical dimension of the person, are seen as garments of the soul. So they express the soul. So it's a different way of seeing this. V'chein abriya, now the creation of existence, He b'shvil Yisrael is for the spiritual purpose of Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, fulfilling their role in relation to God, and that includes ultimately all of humanity and everything in the world. V'lachein, and therefore gam klalut ha'olamot, therefore all the worlds mitchalkim legimul madregot, they divide also into three levels. The Tlat Almin Inun. There are three worlds. Now you see that footnote 20 gives a reference to the Zohar. And the Zohar speaks about a very exalted world which is very hidden. And then there is a middle realm which is spiritual but more tangible. And then there's a lower realm which is a world of distinctions and of separations. So, what exact address we give to those three different levels? There is a comment by Reb Chaim Vital that the upper world is Atzilut, and then the next one down is Bria, and then the next one down is Yitzira. He refuses to fit Olam Hazeh into this pattern, into this schema, because he says Olam Hazeh, this world is too low. But I think that a Chabad Perush on it, I didn't research this properly, but I suspect that a Chabad Perush would say that there is this world and there are spiritual realms, and then there is beyond, beyond the ordinary dimensions of spirituality. In fact, I was reading another Maimer recently which spoke about that. So that's what how I imagine the Chabad Perush would be of this passage in the Zohar. So there we have those three levels as well of the world. And the fact that the Jewish people and the world are divided in three nimshach mitchalkut shelifnei zeh b'Torah comes from the distinction, the divisions that there are before this in the Torah. Now, what are the distinctions in the Torah, and why is this before? You see, Torah kadma l'olam. The Torah comes before the world. So all these other distinctions come from the distinctions which are in the Torah. That's the essential reality. And then come the distinctions in the worlds and so on. What are the distinctions in the Torah? No, you see, that's the what the Talmud says. But here it's putting it in a different way. The Yeshno Inyan HaHavana V'Hasaga, the Torah, there is the idea of thought and understanding, the understanding and grasping in Torah, Shehi B'Machshava, which is in thought. V'Inyan HaDibur SheBetorah, and then you have speech of Torah, and there are two ways of understanding that. K'mayim HaRazal, Ala Pasuk Chayim Heim L'Motz, no, there's one way. Chaim heim lemotzeim bepeh. The idea is that words of Torah should be read aloud. It's an interesting aspect of Torah. Let's say a person is studying Mishnah or Chumash. One should say the words aloud. It's not just a matter of sight reading. Sight reading is an interesting invention, which I believe was discovered at the beginning of the Renaissance. They didn't know that you could sight read before then. Reading was a thing you did aloud. Then, perhaps in conjunction with the invention of printing, when suddenly there was a lot more to read, there was discovered a new method of reading. You don't have to say the words. You can just sight read. And from there, the sky's the limit. However, the sages may have had some inkling of this, because they emphasize that when you learn Torah, you should actually say the words. So it could be that they were aware of the possibility of sight reading, but they recommended that for learning Torah, one actually says the words. So
I
that's
think another reason. I think the reason is that it follows on from multi-sensory reading techniques you use now. The best way of learning is to use all your senses. If you're doing sight reading, you're not using all your senses.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, in fact, that's exactly what it says. Chaim heim lemotzeim bapeh, and I think it goes on to say the Torah is life for those who find it. But it then changes the meaning of the word motzeim to those who express it with their mouths, and it goes on to say that ima rucha. One second, it's going to. That's the next line over here. Uprinat ha'maaseh shebatorah, and the action of Torah, k'mayim razal ima rucha b'lamach evarim sholcha mishtameret. This is exactly what you were saying, Nicole. If the Torah is arranged in all your 248 limbs, it is preserved. So if your actions are expressing the Torah, or even in just the speaking of the Torah, the physical speaking of the Torah, that is something which preserves the Torah within the person. And so there are different ways of understanding what is meant by the action of Torah, the actual performance of what the Torah says, or the fact of speaking the words of the Torah with one's physical lips, or the idea that the Torah leads to action. So there we have the three different levels. So we've got thought, speech, and action in Torah. We have thought, speech, and action. So there's thought, speech, and action in the person, and also thought, speech, and action of Torah as well. And in addition to that, we also have, if I've got another color, we have three worlds. Utterly exalted and spiritual and lower world, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So whichever way we put it, yes. In fact, the discourse doesn't define it; just quotes the one line of the Zohar. But the Zohar itself then goes into more detail. But even that is ambiguous exactly which level it means. So there we have the three dimensions of the soul, the three dimensions of the physical life of the person, the three dimensions of Torah, and the three dimensions of world. And so all of these have these three qualities, which you remember are like the villager, the member of the city, and the walled city. Okay, so we're now on page 171, which is the next page. It doesn't actually have the number. No, it doesn't. Yeah, it's
half.
Yeah, half. Yeah. Vehine. Vehine. Now behold, in Yan Gimel Bechinot Elo, these three qualities of the soul, ba'avodah de tefillah, in the service of prayer, who we now come to these three dimensions in prayer. Now, hi bevchinat hoda'a moda'ani. Now, the idea that prayer, the daily prayer, the morning prayer, is a kind of a process, like a ladder climbing up, that is very thoroughly expressed in Kabbalistic teachings. There is the idea that the different stages of the morning prayer are like Asiya, Yitzira, Bria, Atzilut. That is, so there is a Kabbalistic Siddur, for example, of Rabbi Isaac Luria, of which there are a number of different versions. And some of those versions, they actually print on the top of the page Asiya or Yetzirah. It actually gives like which world that part of the prayer is corresponding to. Now, in the Chabad Siddur, which is the text as defined by Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, but it doesn't have that. However, in Hasidic teachings, the idea is often repeated, as here, that we start off with the quality of Hoda'ah, Mode'ani V'Hodu. You see, Hoda'ah means acceptance of the divine. The first stage is a kind of a sense of acceptance of the infinite beyond oneself. Now, hodu can be translated as praise God. But here what it's emphasizing within the idea of praising God is the idea of accepting God, of recognizing God. It's this point of recognition, and the recognition of God goes beyond one's own spiritual attainment. One might be cold in oneself at this stage of the prayer, but there is the possibility just of recognition. And Mode Ani, which is the first prayer that a person says, a person is lying in bed and they wake up. So then the ideal is they sit up and they say, Mode Ani Lefanecha, I thank you, God, Melech HaYavakayim, King, living and existing, Shehechazarta Binishmati, that you gave me back my soul, Rabba Emunatecha, great is your faithfulness. And this prayer does not have the word of God in it, the name of God. And so therefore, we are allowed to say this prayer even if we haven't washed our hands. And the idea is that this is the initial relationship of the person with God being expressed right at the beginning of consciousness in the day. And so it's also explained as hoda'ah as a quality of recognition and acceptance. Like modim chachamim l'Rabbi Meir. The sages accept what Rabbi Meir says. So that way, see, modeh usually is understood as thanking. But thanking itself is a kind of expression of acceptance. You know, you give a sweet to a child, he says thank you. He's accepting that you've given him something. So if he doesn't say thank you, he's not recognizing, he thinks the sweet's just coming to him from nowhere. So the saying thank you is a recognition. And after that, after this initial stage of the prayer, which is like nefesh, the lower world, we come to the higher level, havodah depsukei dezimra. We then come to the middle part of the prayer before the Shema, which is Ashrei and various other psalms, which are hilul v'shevach, praising God, singing to God and praising God. That's the middle realm. V'achakach la'avodah de'birchot kir shema u'kir shema. Then come the blessings, the long blessings before the Shema and the actual Shema. And this is a very, very intense relationship with God. And these follow these different levels, as it says over here. One is the level of nefesh, the next one up is the level of ruach, and then we have the arousal of the emotions, until we have the saying of Shema, which is understanding, and that through this we come to a total expression of our emotions in love and fear of God. And then we come to an even higher level, which is total selflessness. We come to the avodah. After the three levels of tefillah, we come to the service of Torah. And Torah means total selflessness. Itachdut v'yichud im HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Being one with God. That God puts His words into our mouth. Ukamayma, as the saying, Ani ha-mishnah ha-medaberet b'ficha. I am the Mishnah who is speaking through your mouth. Now, Eli, do you remember who said that to who?
I am the
Mishnah speaking through your mouth. One of our games in school is, you know, like we have like a phrase, who said to who, you know. Shmuel HaNavi said to Shaul HaMelech, you know. Who said to who, I am the Mishnah speaking through your mouth? Well, it's a rather esoteric statement, and it's very interesting that it appears over here, and in the way that it does appear. This was said to Joseph Caro, Rabbi Yosef Caro, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. And as well as being a very great halachist, he was also a great mystic. And he lived in Tzfat at the same time as Rabbi Yitzchak Luria. And he would get up in the middle of the night and he would say Mishnayot by heart. And he would go into a kind of unusual state of consciousness in which the Mishnah would begin speaking through his mouth. And the Mishnah would say to him, Ani ha-Mishnah ha-medaberet b'toch picha. I am the Mishnah speaking through your mouth. And the Mishnah would tell him all kinds of information, which he would write down in a book. And the book was eventually published, called Magid Meisharim. And it's a highly mystical work. It expresses the mystical dimension of Rabbi Yosef Caro. So Tzvi Verblovsky, professor of mysticism in the Hebrew University, wrote a book about Joseph Caro called Joseph Caro, Lawyer and Mystic, which are generally seen as two opposites, but of course in Jewish thought all is unified together. So, other people have made the point that the legal rulings of Rabbi Yosef Caro are highly influenced by the Zohar. So, he in fact has a strong mystical dimension in his work as a lawyer, quite apart from his teaching as a mystic. Now, what's interesting here?
Can you just tell us who's the author of the book on Caro, Lawyer and Mystic?
Zvi Verblovsky. Mm-hmm. And he's in the Hebrew University.
Thank you.
A Verblovsky spelt with a W. Verblovsky. And if you Google him, I'm sure you will find a lot of interesting materials.
Thank you.
Now, especially since Israeli academics are very good at having articles and things accessible on the web, which English academics haven't quite reached to the same extent.
Well, they're more limited.
Now, what's interesting about this quote, which I've seen in a few times in Chabad Hasidic Torah, is that this Ani Amisha Amadaber Mitoch Picha is really a highly mystical statement said to a unique individual, Rabbi Yosef Caro, a person who yearned to die al Kiddush Hashem and was told by the Magid, by the Mishnah, that you shouldn't yearn to die for Kiddush Hashem because your work as a halachist is much more important. You know, he was a very, very special person. And here the discourse is applying that phrase to each of us whenever we study Torah. Now, there is a sense in which this is part of the genuine democratizing feature of Hasidic thought. You see, at the beginning, when people began to study Hasidism as a historical field, so one way of looking at it, this is a revolutionary movement which democratized Judaism in some way, taking it out of the hands only of the great rabbis and somehow made it more part of the people as a whole. And then came, so that was one theory, as it were, or one approach, and then came counter-approaches. No, on the contrary, it didn't do that. It pushed the Rebbe to the figure of the Rebbe and Tzaddik to a very high position, and everyone is lower down, so it didn't really democratize things at all. But in fact, there is a certain important democratizing process, which is that what the Kabbalists said was the achievement of a Kabbalist, of a great man. Hasidic teachings somehow makes relevant to everyone. For example, a mitzvah, performing mitzvot helped to bring Mashiach closer. So the traditional Kabbalah says that when a Kabbalist performs mitzvot with the right Kavanah, he's bringing Mashiach closer. Hasidic teachings say, when anyone performs a mitzvah, whatever the Kavanah, they are bringing Mashiach closer. So it's a kind of, you know, what you could without making an idol of democratization, but it is a form. It's giving over to every individual a spiritual quality. And this particular phrase is an extremely striking example of an idea that really its context is one individual with unique spiritual experience, mystical experiences, and that suddenly applied to everyone. Sha'adam, and then the va'asim dvarai b'ficha hu b'torah shebektav. There is the written Torah. Va'ani ha'mishna hu b'torah shebalpeh. I'm the Mishnah means the oral Torah. Sha'adam hu b'tachlit ha'bitul. The person is in total selflessness. V'urak oneh ha'kol. And he is just simply like someone who is repeating after someone who's reading to him. In other words, the way that any Jew studies Torah has this quality of repeating what God is saying through him. So the idea that Ani HaMishnah, I'm the Mishnah speaking through your mouth, this is something which in some mysterious way is relevant to every person. And it takes it further on in this chapter. It speaks about the way that every single person has this sense of closeness to God through Torah study. Now then, in the next chapter, and we have to move on, we have the difference between V'hine gimel b'chinat elu. Let's just look at the last two lines of the page. These three qualities, hu gam ken achiluk shebein srafim v'ofanim v'chayot hakodesh. So here we have three kinds of angel. Alright, so I haven't left myself room to put down these three angels, so I'm going to have to like fit them in somehow. So there's srafim at the top. Oh no, wait a minute. Srafim, they are in the world of Bria. And then we have, and they are like the person in the walled city, whereas the Ofanim and Chayat HaKodesh are on the lower level. So we have, so I'm writing this in a different color. I wrote it wrong. Srafim and Chayot HaKodesh, and then we have Ofanim. Now these three types of angel are actually in the Merkava, both of Isaiah and of Yechezkel, and we mention them in the Kedusha, that we say in the repetition of the Amidah. The Seraphim are on the highest level, and they are like still. Chayot HaKodesh have more excitement, and the Ofanim are very excited. Hein b'rash gadol, they are with a great noise. Yes, v'Ofanim b'rash gadol, with a great noise. Mitashtun. So what it's saying here, it's a very interesting paragraph, and time doesn't permit us to go into it in detail, is that the great noise of the lower level, they're at the lowest because in some way they come from the highest. There's the idea that that which is highest falls lowest. And so therefore the very fact that they're at the lowest level is because in some way they have something very exalted within them. So the great noise of the Ofanim, in fact, in some way is more profound than the silence of the Srafim. The silence of the Srafim is a kind of mystical silence.
Sublime.
Yes, a sublime silence. But the noisy enthusiasm of the Ofanim, which is coarser and is more part of this lower world and more part of the realm of action, in fact has something deeper in it. So the Srafim are very spiritual and exalted and beyond, and yet the Ofanim have something more powerful.
Tali, can you just help us also with the translation of these terms? So well, I'm intrigued by the word Chayot HaKodesh. So these are the creatures of holiness.
Yes, yes.
What a wonderful term, Chayot HaKodesh.
Yes, you see that in the Yechezkel image, there... first of all, there are angels with animal faces. So there's the face of a lion, the face of an eagle, the face of an ox, and the face of a man. And these are four faces of an angel, one on each side. And then the angel has wings, and then it has a single hoof as a foot. So in fact, the animals exist because of a spiritual source to the animals. So the sacred animals are the source of the physical animals that we see in the woodlands and the zoos. So the face of the eagle is the source of all the birds, and the ox is of the domestic animals, and the lion is of the wild animal. So everything, and maybe the birds and the fish go together, I'm not sure. But there one has the whole of existence is subsumed in these spiritual concepts. So therefore, Chayot HaKodesh, the sacred animals, and it's, They are these animalistic angels.
And then the
seraphim. Now seraph means flame. So these are the flames. They are on a higher level altogether.
Quiet and still.
And yeah.
Ofanim.
And ofanim.
How do you translate ofanim?
Now, see, ofanim in the image of the merkava of the chariot, the ofanim are like the wheels of the chariot, and because of that, the word ofan in modern Hebrew means a wheel, like ofnaim is a bicycle. But ofanim, and it speaks about ofan betoch ofan, wheels within wheels, and the wheels are covered with eyes. It's a very eyes. Yeah, it's a very dramatic image. And that expresses God's perception of existence. It's like the angels who are there in the world, as it were, and recording the CCTV, the divine CCTV. But that's
the real Big Brother.
So there's a spiritual source not only for the animal world but for the physical, the technological world as well. So that's the ofanim, and so that is this lower level of angel. And well, given that we seem to have come a long way from the story of Purim. Because we are here looking at dimensions of the person's service of God at any time of the year and all the time. And then on the next page, it goes back to the whole theme of Purim and the way in which Purim had a certain power, more concretizing the giving of the Torah, that the giving of the Torah was one way of understanding the story and the way it's discussed in Hasidic thought is that, and in the Talmud, the giving of the Torah was somehow forced. So there are verses which are understood as threatening. God is saying, you must accept the Torah. So the Talmud comments, if we were forced to accept the Torah, Mikan Moda'a Rabba Lo Raita, here we have an excuse against keeping the Torah. And then it says, well, they really accepted the Torah in the time of Purim. And so from here comes a mysterious combination, that on the one hand you have the absolutely mystical experience of Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, being at Mount Sinai and hearing God's voice and the sound of the shofar, and a very spiritual experience like the time of Mashiach with the opening of all spiritual realms. And contrasting that with the time of Purim, when the Jews were downtrodden in the Persian Empire and someone wanted to kill all of them, and they were in a state of suffering and oppression, but their dedication to Judaism, their willingness for Mesirat Nefesh, their devotion to the fact of being Jewish at that point was something which reached to a higher dimension even than the giving of the Torah. The trouble with reaching to a very high dimension is that high dimensions spiritually are extremely dangerous. And this is expressed in the Purim story by the whole idea of Haman. Haman wanted to build a ladder, a gallows. How high?
50
amos high, 50 cubits high. Now the 50 is 50 shari bina, 50 gates of understanding. He's trying to reach to this very, very exalted level of spirituality, because at such an exalted level, evil has power. Because at that level, there's no distinction between good and evil. good and evil in the terms of, like, in the Sfirot, you have chesed on the one side, kindness, and gvura on the other, which is severity. But at a higher level, you can't see the difference. And so Haman is trying to reach to that exalted level, and the revelation of a very exalted level has the danger that there may be a yinika, a flow, which will give energy to evil manifestations. Unless it is properly channeled. And so it is the striving to reach the highest dimension and channel it in the right path. And so that's the emphasis on action. These lower levels have great significance because they enable the very highest dimension, which in itself has a negative potential, to be drawn down in the right way, in a life-giving way. And so therefore Purim reenacts this, in the sense that Purim is a time when people go to a level ad delo yada, till one does not know, like beyond knowledge, expressing the idea of reaching this very exalted dimension. And what is it one doesn't know? Bein Arur Haman the Baruch Mordechai. One doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman or blessed is Mordechai. But in fact, what is happening is it's being channeled in such a way that whichever way you look at it, either you win, either Haman is cursed or Mordechai is blessed, but both of them are good. It doesn't say the opposite. Both of them in fact are in the right channel. So it's a matter of drawing everything down so that it fits in the right channel. So therefore this discourse, and so that is the significance of Maaseh, the world of action, and the Ofanim, with their enthusiasm, actually reaching to a higher root than the Sfarim. So that's the image that the discourse paints, the way in which there are all these in the teaching in the Mishnah about Purim. There are different dimensions, and they are all included in each of us, and in fact they are describing the spiritual service of every man and woman at any time in the year, in all the different aspects of our being, in the different parts of the prayer, and reaching high to Torah study. And at the same time there is this profound quality of reaching to the most exalted level, the ultimate sort of dark dimension beyond of the very essence, and drawing that essence down in such a way that La Yehudim Haita Orav Simchat Sason Yikor, everything beautiful and joyful in a positive way, and bringing life to everyone. So wishing you, and that's why also it says Mishloach Manot, the idea of giving presents of food to people on Purim Day, next Tuesday, is a significant thing. You just take two items of food and give them to another Jewish person, because that brings the ultimate spiritual into a simple practical deed, and also of giving charity. So the spiritual is expressed in the practical, and that helps it to keep stable, to keep a stability in the whole system. In my book that I wrote about the emergence of Chabad historically in around 1800-1820, so there's one section of a chapter called The Protective Emphasis on Action, that given that Chabad is trying to reach these exalted levels and teach them to people, and it's distinguished among the other branches of Hasidism because it's teaching mystical texts through the community, which other Hasidic leaders frowned on. They said it's dangerous, it's too much oil will put out the lamp, one of them put it. But the way in which Rabbi Shlomo Zalman protected this process, and his son Rabbi Dovber, was by a protective emphasis on action. And we have exactly the same situation here in the teachings of the Rebbe. Okay, I wish you a very happy Purim.
Thank you.